Accession number 7396, rule number 9.
Colonel Hancock, reel 9. Could you tell me a little about your surroundings while you were lying on the stretcher, actually on Gallipoli?
Well, it was a bit disconcerting. I've been carried down the trench on a sort of sling, transferred onto a stretcher, and eventually finished up on Sunday night at the in the field ambulance station at Anzac. And there I stayed all Sunday night, the whole of Monday, until I got away on Tuesday morning, I think it was, onto the hospital ship. But I must say, during the night, it wasn't much fun. I don't think I got any sleep at all, as far as I remember. My leg was hurting like blazes, and a lot of people in the long tent where we all were, all on stretchers, I imagine, and some of them badly hit and groaning, that sort of thing going on the whole night. It was a bit disturbing, but, well, that's war. And I must say I was very glad to see the daylight. And then, of course, on Tuesday morning, when I was whisked up onto the deck of the hospital ship, the Universa, was marvellous. And I felt that I was, at last, getting away from the immediate danger of enemy fire. However, that was that. And as I said in the previous here, I was put into a bed, which is marvellous to be into, in sheets of all things, and some real relaxation, because for a long time before, I'd been really tensed up, everybody was tensed up, and it was wearing to the nerves, but this did give me some chance to relax. And very shortly after I'd on board, after we'd sailed, I was given an anaesthetic, and the doctor on the ship did a bit of tidying up of my leg, because the bullet from the shrapnel had gone through my clothing and puttees on my leg, and odd bits of clothing had been carried into my leg by the bullet. And he tidied that up, and the thing I remember about that was a marvellous feeling of losing consciousness under the, it was chloroform. And it really was absolutely lovely. I'd never had chloroform before, and I thought, my chill, this is lovely. Anyway, that did ease things a little bit, and I at last got that very tight bandage off, which is I'd had put on, well, on the advanced dressing station where I'd first gone to. And so things eased a little bit. The only other thing I remember on the ship was there was an Australian in the bed next to me, and he gave me a little figure, 2 or 3 inches long, of a kangaroo, made out of kangaroo skin, which I've kept ever since now, stuck in one of our albums. But that was all I remember until we got to Alexandria, which I imagine was a day or two, I can't remember. And then we were transferred from the ship onto the dock, onto the harbour, the quayside at Alexandra, and into an ambulance, a motor ambulance. And this took us to, took me, to Rasselton Hospital, the old military hospital down by the harbour. I remember the jolting of that ambulance going over the cobbled streets to the hospital was most uncomfortable. That I didn't enjoy at all. However, we got there and we were carried out and put into a bed in the old, that's in the old military hospital there. Now, the ward I went into, I suppose, had what was accommodated, I should think, about 15 or 16 beds, probably. It had been originally for NCOs, but it had been cleared out, and I think the NCOs had been accommodated in another hospital, and this was made over to officers. But there was one NCO there, I always remember, a sergeant, who had had his leg amputated. And rather ironically, his name was Sergeant Boot. And I remember him saying he's an awfully cheery chap, and he's quite philosophical about it. He said, you know, I feel my leg sometimes. Ooh, it does hurt. But I can't quite know why, because it's in there. He had that kind of sense of humour. And that was the beginning of my hospital stay. And the staff, I remember, was Captain Allen, who was a medical officer. The sister in charge of my ward was Sister Swinnerton, and the nurse who attended to me, and I was called, was Nurse Fison. And I must say, they were a most devoted hospital staff. They worked long hours. They'd been there goodness knows how long. And we were all very grateful for their attention. Well, by that time, my leg had begun, of course, had gone septic. Because I suppose most wounds became septic on the peninsula, largely due to the dust and infection of that kind, and of course the clothing that got carried into my leg and that sort of thing, and it got very tiresome, and it had to be syringed out, and a syringe of antiseptic was pumped into the wound on the outside of my leg, and then forced through, and all the muck came out, or some of it came out the other end. I must say it was a pretty grim looking stuff, and at one time got really rather bad. But it eventually yielded to treatment, and it did manage to clean up a little bit. And although it was painful at night trying to get into position to sleep, it was at least very much better, and it obviously began to show signs of improvement. Well, I was in hospital, I suppose, for about 3 months. The only one or two things I seem to remember. One, of course, was what we call the trolley with the medical instruments and so forth on it coming out, known as the agony wagon, which was a morning and afternoon thing. I gradually began to fear it less as the wound took up and got better. Then later on, after I'd been some 6 or 7 weeks, I suppose, I was able to get up on crutches. I couldn't put my foot to the ground. I got on crutches. And stupidly, one day, I thought I'd go out into the garden, which was at the back of the ward. Went down some steps. And, of course, I lost my and went up Perla. Fortunately, I pitched on my shoulder, not on my leg. And I got very smartly ticked off by my nurse, and I got back, and I felt a very small boy for a time. Anyway, that was the way. And then when I was getting a little bit more mobile, I could get there. Occasionally, we would be taken out for a drive in Alexandria. We couldn't do anything, no going, except that we were driven in a gharry, which is like an old open Victoria carriage driven by with a and a horse driven thing. And that, of course, we thought it was marvellous to be able to get outside the ward. And then I don't know where we went. And that was that. And then I then got well enough to go to a convalescent home, which was along the coast somewhere near Luxor. And it was a lovely house, given, or lent rather, by a wealthy Egyptian to the British government as a convalescent home for British troops, and which we were very grateful for. And that was delightful. I can't remember if we did anything particular there. I was getting a little bit more mobile each day. And then...
At this point, did you still think that you might be sent back to Gallipoli on your recovery, or...?
I couldn't see that coming off for a long time. But what I visualised was having to get stuck in Egypt for God knows how long. But not very long afterwards, I was told that as my legs looked like being rather a long time, it hadn't really healed up as it should have done, I was going to be sent back to England, which, of course, is the most wonderful piece of news I've ever had. And that was... that was the end of my stay in hospital in Alexandria. Well, then we were put on board a small converted merchant ship, converted to a hospital ship, called the Escobar. And we went from Alexandria as far as Naples. And there in Naples... we were transferred from the Escobar onto the Britannic, which was a huge, in fact, the biggest English ship afloat at that time, which had been fitted out as a hospital ship as soon as it was launched. Now, it's a curious thing about that, because the summer before the war, my father and I had gone on a trip up the up the Irish Sea in a little merchant ship, and we'd called in at Belfast Harbour, where Holland and Wolff's shipbuilding yard was. And in that yard, we saw the stern of a ship being built. On that stern was the name Britannic. And the next, within a year, she was launched, and she. The next time I saw her was in hospital, as a hospital ship, in Naples. It was really an extraordinary thing. Anyway, we transferred onto that, and in a couple of days, I think we set sail. She was anchored there because she was too big to. I understood after she was too big to go into Alexandria Hospital. Harbour. Anyway, we left Naples, and we were set off on the way home. Well, I was allowed up with some of the other casualties. We were allowed up onto the deck, and it was absolutely marvellous to lie on deck with a lovely Mediterranean sunshine and this calm sea, and it was the most enjoyable voyage. Gradually my leg got slightly better, but it never properly seemed to heal, and it was rather a nuisance, really. Anyway, eventually we got to Southampton. I think it was Southampton. I'm not absolutely certain. I think it would have been, because it was one of the few harbours she'd go to. But we were put on a train and sent to London. And from the train, we went by ambulance. I went by ambulance, I don't know about others, to a private house in Brook Street, which had been lent by Rupert Beckett, the Leeds banker, and he had lent it to the government for the duration of the war as a convalescent home for officers. And there I shared a room with one other officer, and for the first time I was able to write to my mother and father. I don't think I was able to telephone. I can't remember quite how I got in touch with them. Anyway, my parents came to see me and various friends, and I spent, I don't know how long there, probably up to a month or something like that. And then I was, by then, able with care to put my foot to the ground, which is the first time I'd done for a long, long time. And I was given a period of leave, I can't remember how long. And I went back home. We were living in St. Albans then. And it was lovely, really, to see one's friends and relations again, and to feel that I was getting better and so on.
How did the civilians react to you as a wounded officer?
Well, they were very sympathetic. That one had been knocked about. They were delighted to see people back, because the casualty list was simply dreadful at that time, and it was a bad period. And of course they were. I don't know exactly what their feelings were, but they were obviously very glad to see one back.
Were people aware of the conditions under which you'd been fighting in the Gallipoli area?
I don't think they were, really. What they, you see, the only information they had was newspaper accounts. Very little first-hand information. And, in fact, I felt very disinclined to talk about the conditions that were obtained. And I think people respected that, and they didn't ask because of that. I hardly ever discussed the conditions with my parents. I felt myself it would be very upsetting to them. And I think they communicated it to other people who wanted to ask me questions, but they didn't for that reason. It was a distinct feeling of revulsion on my part to discuss what the conditions had been.
What happened following your leave?
Well, during the time I was on leave in St. Albans, my leg became rather troublesome. And I was sent to the 4th London General Hospital at Denmark Hill in London. And there I had an operation, because there appeared to the doctors that seemed to think that there was some foreign body in my leg which was preventing it from healing up. And they had a go at this and opened it up, and I think got out little bits of bone, and that was it. I then went back as soon as that had cleared up, I then went to the training battalion, which was at Halton Camp near Aylesbury. And that was almost entirely an infantry camp. There was a tiny area which was used by the Royal Flying Corps, it was then. And now, of course, it's turned into a very large RAF camp. But anyway, I went to the training battalion there and was able to do a certain amount of work, mostly on the parade ground, training recruits.
Was this training any different from the training you'd had yourself?
Well, a little bit different. They had got into trench warfare. They realised what trench warfare was, which when we were beginning our training, we didn't seem to count. Yes, it was a little bit different. I was able to, contribute something towards this training of recruits, which in itself was quite a rewarding thing, and I was glad to be back doing something that I thought was useful. Anyway, that didn't last very long because I still had trouble, and I again had to go back to Denmark Hill where I had a second operation. Now this time they cut down on the inside of my leg quite a bit, and eventually they located a piece of shrapnel bullet which had disintegrated inside my, when it hit the bone inside my leg, and that had been moving about and had been very difficult, and they hadn't discovered it the first operation I'd had. Anyway, they got this a bit out, and I think a bit more bone, that sort of thing, and I stayed some time there until I went to a nursing home to get me to free the bed in the hospital. I went to a nursing home also quite close by for some little time. I probably have a little bit of sick leave, and eventually I went back to the training battalion at Halton Camp.
Do you happen to know what number training battalion this was? Was this of the Northamptonshire Regiment?
Well, it was a training battalion of the 1st 4th Battalion. Let me see. All right. I think it must have... I don't know. No, I can't be
That's
certain
all right.
of that.
No problem.
But it was a training battalion which was existed for the purpose of training recruits before sending them out to the fighting unit.
So you'd returned there?
I returned there, and we made quite a lot of friends in the neighbourhood. I was able to walk about, and I couldn't take part in route marches, but there was a little bit of cricket to be had. This would be, I think, at the beginning of 1916. Leopold Rothschild had a big estate quite close to the camp, and he very kindly let us have the use of a huge sun lounge there, which was very, very nice indeed of us to be able to go and relax after the day's work. We made a number of friends, civilians in the neighbourhood, and altogether it was quite a tolerable existence. And at the same time, as I said, we felt, at least I felt, that we were being useful in training these recruits for to go abroad.
Were the rest of the officers similar cases to yourself? Or?
No. No, many of them, very few of them, had been abroad at all. And the commanding officer and the adjutant never had a shot fired in anger. And it was really rather ironical sometimes to see them teaching trench warfare to people who'd been there. They didn't really know an awful lot about it, but it was taken out of the book. Well, that training went on all through that winter until sometime, I think, fairly early in 1917, I was posted to take charge of a pioneer company attached to the 2nd Gloucesters at Sittingbourne, Kent. And there I was attached to the 2nd Gloucester, who was a regular battalion. At that time, I'm not sure whether they'd been abroad or whether they hadn't, but my job there was to take charge of this company of pioneers, who were all of them men of low category, who were doing work in the neighbourhood. Exactly what they did, I don't know. I was merely responsible for their administration and for discipline. And I was attached, I say, to the 2nd Gloucesters, and I was quartered with them. This was a regular battalion, and as a member of my of the mess there, I learnt an awful lot then about regimental discipline, which in fact I'd never experienced. At all this time I'd belonged to a territorial battalion, and the atmosphere of the whole battalion was totally different. It was most interesting to me. I enjoyed being there very much indeed, and I learned a very great deal, and I learned the very great difference there is between a regular professional soldier and a territorial, or as often referred to as half-holiday soldiers.
Could you illustrate some of these differences?
Oh, yes, I could. For instance, in the mess, on one occasion, I was sitting reading some military manual of some kind, I think, and I think it was the adjutant said to me, "You're not supposed to read that book in here, you know. That's shop." Well, that was a lesson to me in how to behave. And there are three things that we were never discussed in the mess: religion, and women, and shop. And it was very rigorously observed. And that was a very great lesson to me.
What was the attitude of regular officers to you as a territorial? Did they show any sort of feelings towards you?
No, I don't think so particularly. I was very aware of the very vast difference of outlook and of behaviour and discipline between a territorial and a regular. And it was no doubt a very good thing for me. But I felt I was doing a useful job there, although I didn't really like it. It looked a bit of a dead end, I thought. However, it didn't last very long. And then I may have gone back to my own training battalion for a time, but I know the pioneer's job finished, and I was posted back, I think, to my own battalion. May have been still at Halton. And then shortly after that, I got posted to Stourton Barracks in Guildford. Now, my job there was to utilise the labour which was provided by the men stationed at the barracks, helping the farmers with their harvesting and any agricultural work that we were able to do for the farmers in the neighbourhood of Guildford. That would be somewhere towards May or June.